Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and sponsored by Amazon Prime Video, the home of the US Open in the UK. My name is David Law. I'm standing on the broadcast roof of Wimbledon right now, looking over at the new Court 1 roof that is just developing. It's not in operation yet, just 1 year to go. And also Centre Court, of course, which does have its roof on and I don't think is going to be needed at all because it is absolutely glorious sunshine out here at the moment. Blue sky, wispy white clouds. Simon Briggs of The Telegraph is here with me and he's just about to tell me the weather forecast will prove me wrong probably, Simon.
No, it's the other way around. Could they close the roof for heat?
Well, that's an interesting one because, I mean, it is properly hot, isn't it? I mean, we're standing here mid-afternoon on Sunday, the day before the championships begin. It is, 28 degrees, something like that at the moment. I mean, it is hot. It has been for a while. We're looking at the grass here. They've managed to get this green. Imagine how much water has had to go on this grass that we're standing on the broadcast roof, where we're just lined with TV cameras. It's going to be going out all over the world, this tournament. But Simon, I mean, you have had a busy few days. When I just came to you just now and asked you to come on the Tennis Podcast, you were juggling two pieces. You were basically writing into two laptops at the same time, and you've still got Roger Federer coming into the press conference soon.
That's the Rick Wakeman look. I do have multiple keyboards. It's going to be prog rock and the Telegraph tomorrow. Yeah, Roger's coming in at 3:30. I'm sort of hoping he won't say anything too dramatic because I reckon I'm going to have my pieces mostly out of the way by then.
Yeah, and if he does, I'm coming back on the Tennis Podcast to tell you exactly what he said. But here we are standing. I mean, it is extraordinary to think 10 years on from the Nadal-Federer final. The one that everybody remembers, the one that a documentary Strokes of Genius has been made about. You'll be able to see that on BBC Two on Middle Sunday, 6:20 on BBC Two. It's on Tennis Channel in the US if you in the US. That's tonight, actually, I think, 8 o'clock Eastern time. So there's loads of talk about that. There's loads of talk about Serena Williams at the moment, obviously returning. I mean, it's like time just hasn't happened over the last 10 years, that these great players are still expected to go all the way. I mean, is that how you feel? Is that how the paper is billing it? Can you see Nadal, Federer and maybe even Serena, Venus on final weekends?
Well, Nadal is going to have to prove that this year is a very different story to the last decade almost. I mean, not quite a decade, all right, but he hasn't been to the quarterfinals since 2011, so he'd be the biggest question mark out of that group for me. But I do wonder, I mean, what was it about that little period in the... when were they all born? Was it the early 80s? Something about that period. Were they just in the sweet spot where they were picking up the early graphite rackets, learning to hit topspin from the beginning, but they also didn't have quite the overpowering strings that we have today. So they had to learn old school technique. They had to develop so many different facets to their game. I just wonder, I've got this theory that it's something about being born in that period. And, you know, Andy Murray and Novak Djokovic, they were almost the same, 6 years later or so. It was something to do with that period of being a perfect education. Now, you from the beginning, from the moment you arrive on the tour, you can drive these kind of wicked topspin dipping balls, and you don't really venture to the net much, whereas in those days, they really got the full tennis education.
Yeah, I like that. I do feel that there's something in that, and it's also... It also feels like a reaction to the serve and volley era, because that happened, and then Leighton Hewitt et al. Blunted that with the returning and so forth, and then these guys who could hit from the baseline and do a bit of everything came along. And just, I was talking on Five Live a little earlier, charting this generation of players. The fact that we've got so many of the greatest players of all time playing at the same time and well into the 30s, I mean, it is mind-boggling. I mean, in 10 years' time, I wonder how we'll be looking back on all this.
It could be a golden era. I mean, we do also have a very exciting batch of youngsters. I mean, I'm going to do some selling here. The Telegraph pullout tomorrow will include some interviews with some of the rising stars, including Stefanos Tsitsipas, who I found to be very charismatic, interesting man, and Taylor Fritz, also a really interesting talker. He says he wants to be the first professional athlete to be simultaneously a professional esports player.
Really?
Yeah, that's right. Meanwhile, to return to the rackets issue, I tried out Roger Federer's racket in the racket room at Australia's National Tennis Centre. So I've written a piece about what it was like to play with the RF97.
And how was it? I mean, you and I have played with the Laura Robson racket of, when was that, 2013? You and I were given one of those to try out. We didn't quite get the sort of Laura Robson effect when we hit the ball towards her. Did you get the Roger Federer effect? Did it rub off?
Oh, it was a horrific experience in terms of, I was out there being measured by this wired-up court that could record my spin speed. So my... I think my ground stroke speed was something like 40 miles an hour slower than the average tour pro on both sides. So basically I was a milk float. And also, because it turns out that the interesting thing about Roger's racket is that the weight is in the handle, which differentiates him from all the other professional rackets I tried. They had a whole selection of them. So I played with Rafa and Nadal's, which when you touch the ball just disappears into orbit, I can tell you. I played with Venus Williams's, which was the easiest one for a clubby like me. But Roger, above all of them, has the weight in the handle. So this means that the head is very light, so he can sort of swish it around, and it's very manoeuvrable. And it's actually very difficult for a club player, because the weight in the handle means there's a lot of inertia in it. So if you've got a crabby swing like mine, you don't get through the ball, and it doesn't really go anywhere. Whereas he's got that amazing loose whip of an arm, very straight arm by comparison with most players, coming from the shoulder, liquid... whip. That was what David Foster Wallace called it, wasn't it? A great liquid whip, the Federer forehand. So that shot, he accelerates his arm so much that the inertia doesn't matter. So it's a trade-off for him in terms of having the maneuverability and the speed at the same time. But for a club player, just, you know, don't even bother.
Okay, I won't. I'm not even a club player. So Roger Federer, he comes in as the bookie's favourite. I mean, he's been given a pretty good draw again, hasn't he? I mean, he's in the top half of the draw. So he avoids Nadal, who's obviously in the bottom half of the draw. In the bottom half of the draw is also Djokovic and Del Potro. So, you know, it's not bad, is it? I mean, I asked the question on social media at Tennis Podcast. Complete the sentence. Roger Federer will not win this tournament because. Because, I mean, you know, I'm not saying that he's the foregone conclusion that Rafael Nadal felt during Roland Garros, but when you go through, it's kind of hard to find out who's going to stop him. Marin Cilic may be in the semis.
Yeah, that's what I've said, actually. I did chat about this with Russell Fuller on the BBC, and I'm backing Cilic to win the title, because when I watched him at Queen's, it was the backhand up the line that struck me. You know, that's not necessarily a shot he's associated with, so he's already got the kind of the killer serve, the forehand, which was measured in Australia, I think, as the number two fastest behind Songa. Suddenly, it was either the second or third team was in the top three. Those were the top three. The backhand, you don't particularly necessarily think of as being a strength, but it is incredibly good. When he won the US Open, he was obviously just hitting lights out on both wings. And when I watched him, the way that he was lining it up the line at Queens, it was almost Djokovic or Murray-esque, that stroke. And he thought, if he's doing that on top of everything else, I just feel like he's probably ready to win another slam because he's been so consistent in the last year. So my feeling is that Cilic will beat Federer in that semi-final. It's not often you hear me back against Federer, is it?
No, it isn't. And actually, at Tennis Podcast, there's quite a few people who are agreeing with you here, that they just feel Vikesh says he'll lose to Cilic in the semis, make some errors at key points in the fourth set tiebreak. Think of Raonic in 2016. That's very specific. Special Smiley says it hasn't been a great year since January for Federer. The Australian Open, obviously, but he's lost to players like Del Potro and Kokkinakis and Chorich, people that maybe you wouldn't expect that he would lose to. But I mean, do you hold much in all that? I mean, obviously he hasn't played the clay court season at all. I was surprised by the Chorich loss. I didn't see that match. I don't think of Chorich as a grass court player. He obviously played exceptionally well.
Yeah, but I think when you look at the matches, it was 8 in 12 days for Roger. So I just think he's not playing for a couple of months before that. I mean, I just think that was probably... I didn't watch it. Cards on the table, I didn't watch it. I can't remember where I was on that day. But
well, it was during the Queen's final for a start, wasn't it? And when Cilic obviously won through in nearly 3 hours against Djokovic. I think that win for Cilic will have done the world a good for him mentally against Djokovic because he'd had that 14-1 record against him.
So the interesting stat that in that final I thought was a 36% that Cilic served first set, which got him into trouble. Now, that was, I guess, a lapse that one would have to say is mental, because clearly there's nobody else out there messing with your service action, and it wasn't like it was a gusty day particularly or anything like that. So he did have a bit of a mental barrier to go through, but he put it back on track in the second set, obviously saved match point with a big booming serve speared out to the Djokovic backhand, and then he turned it on and got better and better. So it almost, maybe as you say, might bring him more self-belief than if he just eased through that match without any troubles. So yeah, it was a big mental step for him, and he basically outthought Novak in the end.
It was notable as well for me that he did it without a huge amount of histrionics in the celebration afterwards. He remained composed and calm, as though, yeah, and he was saying afterwards, if I started to get my serve going, and if that happens, I back myself. There's a serenity about Cilic just at the moment. So I haven't made up my mind completely, but I am leaning towards thinking that he could stop Federer as well here. Other half of the draw, do you think this is going to be the year that Nadal comes through and actually gets to the final again? I mean, he's had a terrible time, really, at this tournament over the last few years. His big successes always came after he'd played at Queens before. Obviously, he's a lot older now. He feels that, I guess, he can't do that run of winning the French, going to Queens and then coming here. But do you feel that it is in him to produce here and go all the way?
Well, the weather has got to be a point in his favour. I mean, I'm no expert, really, on the physics of grass. Having said that, I have written a few pieces with the groundsman stuff in the past, but it's still such a complicated subject. But I just think it's going to bounce higher, isn't it? And that's got to be an advantage for him. Also, I don't see too many huge servers up until maybe the point when he plays Del Potro or maybe Shapovalov or Chardy from that section in what would be, what, the quarterfinal? So I think he will probably get to that stage. When you look at where he's returning serve from, that's going to be a problem, isn't it? In other tournaments, I'm not talking about grass. We haven't seen him on grass this year. He's standing so far back, so that means that the angles are wider. I mean, he's going to have to cover a bigger slice of the pie chart. And the ball just slides, doesn't it, on the grass court. The slider gets a little bit of help. I think he's going to have to look at what he's going to do on return. It's been a big issue. In the past, he's often been taken out by an inspired server. Gilles Muller last year, when he thought he was beginning to get some Wimbledon form behind him, he said many times, I wasn't far away last year. I really was beginning to feel it. I guess if you go second week as well, the grass begins to wear down a little. And as he said, the other day, there's more clay. The phrase he used yesterday, wasn't it? There's more clay out there as the tournament goes on. We know what he means.
Yeah, we do. Now, before we started recording, Simon, you just said to me, you've been writing this Kyle Edmund piece, and you said British number one Kyle Edmund, you thought, will this weather help him? You've mentioned the Nadal element, the higher bouncing ball that one feels will happen here, because the surface must be harder, surely, if it's got this amount of heat on it. Now, I said to you, I think I know an example whereby that is true from the past. And I do. And I said it was 15 years ago. I've actually realised my maths is out. It's 25 years ago. 1993 was known as the Sunshine Championships. And it did not rain once in the whole fortnight. And in the final, you had Pete Sampras in his first ever year. And you had Jim Courier, the man who is always compared to Kyle Edmund whenever we talk about Kyle Edmund, because the similarity, I think, physically in their complexion and their look, but also their forehand, the way they just take charge with that sort of shot. And that year was the first year that Courier had ever made a run here. The year before, he'd come in as the overwhelming world number one. He'd been beaten by Andrei Olhovsky in the fourth round. I remember a proper grass court player on a damp grass court. Courier coming in, having won the Australian Open and the French Open, and yet he got to Wimbledon and he got sliced and chipped and charged and volleyed out of the championships. Then he comes in 1993, baking hot tournament, Independence Day, 4th of July, final against Pete Sampras, and, you know, he got himself there. He was hitting shoulder-high forehands throughout that championship because that's where the ball was bouncing to him, and he was just hitting that frying pan forehand of his away. Sampras stopped him in the end, but that is my theory as to why both Nadal and Kyle Edmund could make real hay here.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, I that's a good example, but I don't think Kyle... He's not in the conversation to win it, is he? I mean, I think...
No.
I think there's probably a very small number of people who can win it, but it's really key because when you look at his record here, it's quite extraordinary. He's won one match, he's lost five, and the bloke that he's beaten was Alexander Ward, the world number 869. So let's be honest, to say that he doesn't have pedigree here, it would be a huge understatement. But look, he's a different man. He's been to the Australian Open. He's beaten Andy Murray last week in what was a bizarre occasion.
What did you make of all that?
Ooh, well, I'm sure we'll get on to Andy Murray in a second, but let's just finish Kyle and point out that he went through a mental barrier there. Whatever you're talking about in terms of forehands and backhands, that was more of a, you know, can you stand up and say, I'm taking the baton today? And he did do that. Okay, he then did a rather Kyle-ish thing by losing to Kukushkin in the next round. I didn't watch it. My colleague Charlie Eccleshare, a tennis podcast guest of many times, he was there, so I can't tell you what happened, but it was a kind of Kyle-ish thing perhaps at this stage of his career. Still, it's always two steps forward, one step back with Kyle, which is progress, but slow progress. That's the manner of the man, with the exception of his breakthrough at the Australian Open. So yeah, he needs to get some wins here, and as you say, it's absolutely the perfect conditions for him.
They are. I actually think that the progress he's made at the last two, yes, they haven't been spectacular at either Queens or Eastbourne, but he's actually beaten some people that I would have thought, oh, you know, I'm not sure. I didn't know whether he would beat Andy Murray, and he beat him pretty handily in the end. So I was about to ask Simon what he made of Andy Murray and how he thought he might do at this point based on his performances at Queens and at Eastbourne last week, that match he lost to Kyle Edmund, having beaten Stan Wawrinka, and he'd taken part in a lengthy press conference on Saturday. There had been lots of laughs and jokes about the fact that Argentina against France was suddenly a goal fest just as he was in his press conference, and Murray was a bit frustrated and wanted to go and watch it. At that stage, he was very much playing Wimbledon, and we expected him to be stepping out on Tuesday against Benoit Paire. And Simon and I had a little chat at this point of the podcast to talk about how we thought he might do, maybe win a match, maybe one or two. And now, just after 5 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, a couple of hours after Simon and I recorded that section of this show, Andy Murray announced that he's withdrawing from Wimbledon, that he's not going to be able to take part. He said, "It's with a heavy heart that I make this decision, but I'm not quite right yet. Yes, I've made significant progress at the tournaments, at Queen's, the Fevertree Championships, and then again at Eastbourne. He's making progress in practice as well, but the rigours of a five-set format are very different," is what Andy Murray said. And I dare say that has really hit him hard, because he's close. He's close to being able to make a comeback. I don't think he'd have gone particularly far in this tournament. I think he might have been able to get through a match, but I don't know that for sure. He knows his body way better than I do. And he's decided that it's too much for him at this stage in order to properly do himself justice, and I suspect that that's the big thing. You know, it's Wimbledon. He doesn't want to come out and give a pale imitation of who he really is, and so Andy Murray's decided not to take part in the Wimbledon Championships this year. I think it'll hurt him as well, because how many more times is he going to be able to play? That is something he just doesn't know. I mean, you only have so many Wimbledons in you, so he will have been desperate to get out here, and it will hurt that he can't. So no Andy Murray at the Wimbledon Championships in 2018, and it's a shame.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. So, the women's draw. What do you think? That in itself is so fascinating to me, because you've got Simona Halep coming in as world number one and French Open champion. She's finally conquered that demon of her own. And yet on grass, to me, she doesn't feel like a really top contender, because I expect to see somebody who's going to come out blitzing the ball, winning the title. I would probably put Petra Kvitova at the front of that queue, because I think when she is on, She's nigh on unplayable. Muguruza, of course, last year. Serena Williams is back in the draw. But there are a lot of question marks over a lot of players.
Yeah, I would say Kvitova is the bookies' favourite, and justly so. She's got herself fitter. She's won 6 titles in the last year.
It's incredible, that, isn't it? Reading the Bonnie Ford, if you haven't seen it, the Bonnie Ford ESPN article about what she's been through, the comeback and rehabilitation, recovery from her attack, her knife attack at the end of 2016, just remarkable. When I read that was 6 titles. I thought, is that a misprint? I mean, that's a lot of titles.
And they're all on different surfaces. She's done all 3. The only question, which I would have liked to have seen in that piece, which was excellent, was, does she want it more having had it taken away from her? I don't think she really addressed that in that piece. I think she has elsewhere, but that's the impression you get, because let's be honest, Kvitova was always a how am I feeling about my tennis this week? Not so much how am I hitting it, but can I really be bothered to put out my best level? And when she did, she was unstoppable, but she just didn't maybe have that thing that tennis was the be-all and end-all in her life. Maybe she was too well-rounded for her own good, perhaps, in the past. She would have won more titles if she hadn't been such an interesting and open person. I mean, she's absolutely delightful to interview, isn't she? And she remembers your name, and she went and did a journalism degree, I think, or a year of it during this period when she couldn't play. So everyone loves Petra. I think she has decided that she wants to maximise what time she has left. I mean, which is not to say that it's short by any means. It's just that was the way that she talks now. That I think she said that before she was attacked, she had got a new team together and told them, "I want to win another slam. That's my career goal." And in a way, you feel that winning one more slam would almost be par now, and that maybe she could do better than one more slam. But let's not get carried away before we see her go to another final. She needs to get there. She needs to show that mentally she can cope with the stress. But I think she's a valid favourite for here. With the fitness level is higher than I've ever seen it.
And it needs to be. And I would actually say the flip side to what we've talked about with Nadal and Edmund is I think the hot conditions can hurt her in as much as she doesn't like them. She's, I believe, an asthmatic. She's often looked uncomfortable in hot conditions. Now, obviously, 28 degrees in London is not 40 degrees in Melbourne. But I do think it is a consideration. I think it won't be to her liking as much as it will to certain other players. What do you think about... I mean, talking of somebody who won't mind a bit about it is Caroline Wozniacki, who just managed to win the Eastbourne title. Catherine Whittaker was down there, regular here on the Tennis Podcast, my co-host. She'll be back with us every day from tomorrow. We're just giving her one little day off, Simon, because we're like that here on the Tennis Podcast. I had the whole week off, incidentally, lying in a dark room after Queen's, so it's fair play. But what do you think? Who strikes you as the person that's going to come through? Or could Serena just out of nowhere suddenly come and start rampaging through this draw? What do you think?
I mean, just on the heat, I mean, it might not help for Kvitova's health, but it would help her serve. And the same goes for Williams. So she's not serving much because of the right pectoral injury she brought in, she said. But then sometimes she serves better on the day if she hasn't been doing much practicing. I mean, she's... How many years has she been playing the sport for? She doesn't need to go through hours on the training court, and that serve can win her the title, you know, almost on its own, because you can't break her if she's nailing her spots. It's just not physically possible. So I wouldn't rule her out. I mean, I think she's the second favourite with the bookies, and again,
Serena is.
Well, she was last week.
Wow. Serena could play Elena Svitolina in round three. I mean, she got that seeding, didn't she? Number 25. Do you think that's about right?
It's a mixed blessing, that seeding, because you know that if results go with ranking, you will play a top eight seed in the third round. So, in fact, if you're unseeded, you can have a worse draw, but you can have a much better one. So it was an interesting decision. I mean, I think... it was the least controversial call because it meant that no one got affected apart from poor old Dominika Sibulkova.
She got pushed out the seedings, didn't she? And she actually said she wasn't too pleased about it. She felt the whole thing was unfair.
Well, I was there in Eastbourne when we asked for her to come to press, and we asked her about it, and she was quite tactful. Then she left, and then we got a call from the WTA saying, Dominika's been thinking about this, and she wants to come back and talk to you again.
That's interesting.
That's not a common experience, and if it does happen, it's usually because the player wants to tone down something that they think might be controversial and get them in trouble. Quite the reverse in this instance. She came in and said, right, I hadn't really thought about it, but now you mention it, it would be really unfair if I'm not seeded, and I want to put that on record. So we were like, oh, great.
Yeah, nice line. Good for her. You know, it's nice to hear that sort of transparency and the real story from somebody. And you do get that from Dominika Sibulkova. Whether you agree with it or not is up to you. But at least she tells you what she thinks. So Serena Williams, we know, is back. She's got Arantxa Rus or Rus in the first round. And that's going to be played on court 1, third up tomorrow. Of the women's draw, so you're going for Kvitova, would you say that at this point? I mean, we've got to get our predictions in by start of play tomorrow. I know I've got to push you into that, but I'll let you off not having to go completely on the record now, because you've got nearly 24 hours to do so. And you're rolling your eyes at me. I can tell beneath your sunglasses there. Don't want to have to do the predictions, David. Just leave me alone. Stop putting me on the spot. But it's just a who's who, isn't it, of players who you feel as though could win this title, and yet I wouldn't put my house on any of them.
Madison Keys, maybe?
Well, she got the big game, hasn't she? She had the good run at the French Open. Yet you, I don't know, you talked about Marin Cilic earlier as somebody who you can rely upon. I don't think you can rely upon Madison Keys, and I think that that is the problem. She might do it, but I'm not confident that she will just keep punching the clock every day and get it right.
But who can you rely on in the women's draw? I mean, this is the great conversation about women's tennis. I have said repeatedly that women's tennis has been much more entertaining than men's since that incredible 2017 Australian Open, where the men set a new benchmark in somewhere out in the farther reaches of the galaxy, which we may never see a tournament like it. And the women's tournament was good as well, but okay, the men just, it was just different level. But since every tournament since then, every slam, the women's been much more interesting than the men's. But the other side of that coin is that there's nobody out there since Serena stepped off the tour to have a baby. There's been nobody out there who you can rely on. And that's one of the reasons it's so interesting. But it also sort of makes it difficult to sort of have a narrative-based conversation. And you know, that I always said that Serena was too dominant. She was like Lance Armstrong when he was... That's a terrible comparison. So let me take that one back. She was like Michael Schumacher. Sorry. When he was driving to every title in the Formula One universe and he kind of killed it. And I felt like she was over-dominant, she was over-mighty, as they used to say about the Tudors, in her period, sort of between coming together with Patrick Mouratoglou and stepping down to have the baby. That she was just too strong. It meant that there was not enough oxygen in the room for everybody else. Now we've got a free-for-all. It's just like sort of Siamese fighting fish in a tank.
So much fun. Can't wait. All starts tomorrow. Simon, just quickly, tell us what we can look forward to in the Telegraph tomorrow, because you've been writing away like crazy down there. It's like we've been watching the Roadrunner with that sort of dust and cloud of dust in the air as the feet go mental on the ground, and that's been your typewriter, also known as a computer.
Well, I have done a few trails, haven't I? So we got five...
Why Taylor Fritz?
Because we did five boys to watch.
Who are the others?
Chorich is in there, Kachanov and Tiafoe, Tsitsipas. So we did a photograph.
No Shapovalov?
Well, we did him before the French Open.
Oh, yes, of course you did. I played a hand in that. And what about Zverev?
Well, we did him last year. He was you sort of have to vary it up a bit.
I mean, I see.
Zverev was our big Wimbledon preview last year. Shapovalov was our French Open. You know, you can't do the same guys over and over again, although I have been back to the Simona Halep well more than once.
How's she going to do?
That is a complete unknown, isn't it? I mean, traditionally, players who win their first slam don't really set the world on fire in their next slam, particularly when they have taken an awfully long time to build up to it. And you wouldn't say that the courts, the conditions, the whole Wimbledon thing is necessarily suited to her. So she's a bit of a... For a world number one who won the last slam, I think she's surprisingly far back.
Not getting a lot of chat at the moment. But anyway, I can't wait to read your stuff in the paper tomorrow. Simon Briggs from The Telegraph. He'll be with us throughout the tournament from time to time. We'll also try and get some of his colleagues on as well. As I say, Catherine Whittaker will be back with us from tomorrow. Daily editions of The Tennis Podcast. Wimbledon starts on centre court at 1 o'clock with Roger Federer against Dusan Lajovic of Serbia. Then it's Caroline Wozniacki in action against Varvara Lepchenko. Stan Wawrinka against Grigor Dimitrov. How about that for a first round? That's third up on centre court. Court one's got Donna Vekic against Sloane Stephens. Liam Brody of Britain against Milos Raonic. And then it's Serena Williams in action third up. Marin Cilic starts the action on court number two. It all starts tomorrow. We can't wait. I'll be on BBC Radio 5 live, as will Catherine. She'll be on BBC TV as well. We've been The Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and sponsored by Amazon Prime Video, the home of the US Open in the UK from this year. We'll speak to you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.